Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast in the Locked On Podcast Network. Have a really fun show today. It's a little less formal than what we've done. It's a crossover show with Locked On Heat with David Ramil and Wes Goldberg, two guys I really respect. And I think you're going to find this show really fun. We talked not just about the Cavs and the Heat, but went to some general basketball stuff, some just kind of wide-ranging topics. And for the Cavs, just so you know, we did this because tonight's Cavs game is not particularly the most important Cavs game. They also play the Hornets on Saturday. The Heat are without guys like Justice Winslow, Deion Waiters. A lot of their very good players are not playing, and there's a chance the Cavs really win this one easy and are playing Pokemon Go in the fourth quarter. So just know that that's why this one's a little bit less of a straight-up preview and more of just kind of looking at some fun things and just kind of talking about basketball. Every once in a while, that's something we want to do on the show. I don't want to always be bogged down, kind of just breaking down little things and trying to find just a little minute things about a game that in an 82-game season might not mean that much. We want to have fun on the show. We want to make sure you guys get a wide variety of topics. We'll also have a show tomorrow, kind of a little extra with Jared Dubin, like I mentioned yesterday, that we recorded, and I just haven't had a chance to edit yet, but I'm really excited about. And we'll be back on Monday, obviously, with a mailbag show, so please drop your questions to lockdowncavs@gmail.com or to @lockdowncavs on Twitter. And remember, don't let 2016 distract you from the fact that the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals. Buy a limited edition 3-1 lead lapel pin and sticker pack from I'm Sorry Mark Jackson, a merch store by Fear the Swords' Daniel Rao. While you're there, you can also pick up a Doris Burke pin or a Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy sticker. All proceeds are going to go directly to Dan's donut-filled diet and art. So go to bit.ly/sorrymark and buy Dan's pin so Dan can buy some donuts. And without further ado, here's today's show with the Locked On Heat crew of David Ramil and Wes Goldberg.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is scintillating basketball talk, by the way.
I mean, no, Jared and I...
This is what brings those big numbers in.
I mean, Jared and I ended up talking about, like, the fact that Katie Holmes at Cavs Knicks for, like, 5 minutes and talking about, like, who else we'd want to be in a game. It's kind of great.
Oh.
Ooh, I love that. Dave and I often talk about, like, sideline people.
Well, before we joined the Locked On podcast, I remember several episodes where we discussed, like, the commercials they used to show during League Pass. Yeah, because there were so many, like a variety of commercials over in the West Coast that I'd never even seen, of like whole restaurants and chain stores and things like that that don't exist in the East Coast. And it was just pretty interesting. And particularly in Miami and South Florida, you know, you get a lot of commercials that are skewed towards the Latin market. And so, like, there are commercials in Spanish or like with salsa music in the background. And it's like, you don't get these in Indiana, I'll tell you that.
It's that. And it's like the car dealership commercials, like with Heat people in them, like the Heat announcers will be in it. So it's like, it's either skewed towards like the Hispanic community in Miami or like the big Jewish community in Broward County. It's one of the two.
Kendall Toyota and Lexus of Hollywood. I mean, yeah. Good stuff.
That's amazing. That's just, like, in Cleveland, you just get, like, the local car ads with, like, Francisco Lindor, and there's this one really terrible one that I'm just like, how do you even, like, think this is, like, worth, like, paying money for? Like, I'm so confused of, like, why you, like, the people spend, like, thousands of dollars to do this.
It's like, did they try it twice, or did they just do it one time, and they're like, all right, we're done here.
Or I could, if I was an athlete and someone was paying me to do that, I'd be like, look, you're going to pay me this much. I'd like leave as soon as like my time was up. Like I'd charge by like how long I was there.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't have time to do these like cheesy local car commercials.
Yeah, I don't have time for them. I get asked all the time.
My personal favorite was like George Hill doing like Indiana Credit Union or something like that, like a random bank. It's like, wow, really, huh? That's, you know, he really trusted that bank and he said so. So now I believe it. I put all my money there.
Indiana Credit Union. Can't even,
yeah, absolutely.
You got to pay like $5 for every withdrawal because you live in Florida. But like George Hill said,
but George Hill, he told me to do it and I trust George Hill. I wonder what happened now that he's in Utah. Does he switch banks? I mean, what happened? I mean, these things are disastrous.
Like the Mormon Credit Union.
It's surprising he even left.
Yeah.
Well, he's traded.
But yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I'm good with wherever you guys, who wants to lead, who wants to start it. And I'm good with what we kind of talked about in the email of kind of doing a little bit of everything. I'm good with that.
Well, we're more than willing to spend 20 minutes talking about Dion Waiters, so you picked the right podcast.
I have so many questions.
Oh, we have all the answers.
I love Dion so much. Like, he's for really dumb reasons. Like, I will defend him.
Yeah.
Because, like, I was convinced that he was going to be really good.
Sure.
And I think I talked myself into it because when they drafted him, I really wanted the Cavs to get MKG. And I think, like, the first year I was covering Cavs games, I was, like, doing it home from break when I was home from college. And they were really bad. And it was like Byron Scott was coaching. And like Kyrie was out this game. And I remember I went to this game where they played the Pacers. And he scored like 18 points in the second half. I was just like, I'm in. Like, I'm in on the Dion Waiters. This is going to be like amazing
thing. Well, we've been irrational Waiters fans. We've got the hashtag Waiters Peninsula going on. And I don't know. I'm with you. I'm rooting for him. I like him. But most people hate him.
Thunder. He was like good with the Thunder.
He's been fine with the Heat. Like, defensively, he's been really good. Like, does he miss a bunch of layups? Does he make some dumb passes sometimes? Sure, but like nobody else is doing that stuff for Miami, so it's like you might as well try it.
Yeah, I have a. I'm sure you've seen the design, but I have a Waiters Island T-shirt.
Yeah,
that's with the Gilligan's Island font.
Sounds great.
I own a lot of dumb NBA T-shirts. That is like my prize NBA T-shirt.
How many times a month do you wear it?
It's been my lounge T-shirt this week, so like I've worn it like 6 times in about 3 weeks, probably. Like just sitting around, like doing blogging. Like last time I was recording, like a post game show, and I was like watching the first half of Clippers and Warriors, and like I was just like in my, and the guy I was recording was like, "Where did you buy that?" I'm like, "Dude, don't worry about it. Like,
don't, you can't like, handle this."
Like a random TeePublic guy who designed it. Like, just made the shirt, and I don't know why he did it, but, like, I'm very thankful that he did.
So you still kind of follow him, or as far as, yeah, like, monitoring his progress in Miami?
I didn't know he was hurt, and then, like, when I started, like, I did my weekly, like, look, and I was like, oh, crap, I'm not gonna, like, I was gonna go cover the game on Friday, and I was, like, planning on taking one off because of, like, there's a back-to-back this weekend, and then there's, like, a bunch of interesting games coming up, so I was like, okay, I'm gonna take, like, one where I don't bother going down. And then I was like, oh, Deanne's not playing, and it doesn't look like Winslow's playing. So I was like, there's literally no point to this.
That's kind of how we've been feeling. There's like barely a point in watching the Heat lately.
That's rough.
Yeah, we reached a tough one last night watching them face the Atlanta Hawks, and we were struggling because it just seemed like an overall lack of effort, particularly from the guy that they're building this team around in Hassan Whiteside, and it just looked like he was being bullied around by an older player in Dwight Howard. And I know that, you know, we know that Howard is an accomplished player and you know, he's had a great career and whatnot, but just the fact that Whiteside he was completely taken out of the game. It was completely mitigated and it was just painful to watch. And I think it piles up watching frustrating loss. And it's so hard to balance that between the knowledge that, you know, the roster's been injured, the projected starting lineup has only played like 2 minutes altogether, and yeah, we know that, you know, consciously, but at the same time you watch these games every night and you don't see any kind of growth and development, and then you see players, you know, taking nights off like Whiteside did last night, and that's difficult to watch.
Yeah, that would be that was like what the Cavs were like for the non-LeBron years, and it sucked. Like, it sucked. Like, I was like, that was when I was running right down Euclid. And, like, coming up with, like, stuff to write was always, like, terrible. Like, I remember, like, people be like, can I write, like, 800 words on Earl Clark? I'm like, why? Like, why would you do that to yourself? Like, I'm happy for the content, but, like, literally, what are you going to... Like, he's terrible at inbound passes. Like, that's all there is. Like, he blew, like, two games with bad inbound passes.
What was like, Kyrie Irving similar to that? Like, those first couple of years without LeBron, where it was just, like, this guy is not bracketed, or, like, there's no balance to his game, and he's just, like, going, like, hog wild, and you're, like, wondering, like, can we build a winner around this guy, or was it just kind of like, who even cares?
I worried that how good he was. Like, I knew he was, like, very skilled and all this stuff, and my whole thing was, like, I feel like they were, like, sabotaging a lot of what he needed because, for one, look at who coached him. Like, right. Byron and Mike Brown. Like, not great. They tried to make the Deion thing work, and that didn't happen. And then, like, they never had anyone for him to run the pick and roll with, really. Like, Anderson was always hurt. And then, like, they get Spencer Hawes for half a year, and it's like, oh, my God. Like,
that's right. I forgot that. Yeah.
There's like a stretch where, like, they were scoring, like, 1.14 points per possession on pick and roll with those two. And I was just like, run this every time. And it was like, Mo Spates came for that little bit. And it was like, oh, Mo Spates makes them, like, functional. And it was like, this is a really low bar to pass.
It's kind of like what the Heat are doing now. It's like, Wayne Ellington, oh my God, what a godsend.
I love Wayne Ellington. I love Wayne Ellington. I talked to his, like, I talked to his trainer once, like, in Philly, and, like, he got on the phone and was like, yeah, I want to go back to the Cavs because me and my Philly boy Deion got to take over the league. And I was just like, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life.
Wow, I wonder if that played a part in Deion signing with Miami, because I think Ellington was signed by Miami first, and then, of course, you know, Waiters had the whole mixed up with the Thunder and his free agency and everything else, and then he wound up signing with Miami. I wonder if that played a part in it.
Yeah, I think they're boys. Like, I think everyone from Philly is, like, friends with each other.
It seems like it.
They all train with this one dude who's, like, a high school teacher by day.
And he's like, great.
And he's like, I think he's like 5'10". He's like 260 pound. Like, and he plays guard in pickup games.
Yes.
That explains the amazing success that Deion Waiters, Wayne Ellington, and Derek Williams have all had in the NBA.
Yeah, look up Chuck Ellis. He's a really nice guy, but he's like, he trains the Morris brothers, he trains Deion, he trains Ellington, and he trains, like, a bunch of, like, high school kids in Philly, and by day he's like a teacher in the inner city, and he's just, like, a huge dude. He's, like, just a huge dude.
Huh. That's amazing.
I'm like, Deion, like, just go get, like, an actual trainer. Like, you have the money. Like, go to LA for a summer.
He's in Miami, where there's, like, literally all of the greatest trainers on the planet.
Like, yeah, literally. Like...
Like, everybody lives there to train.
Yeah, like, just go get Cal's trainer, and, like, you'll probably be better off anyway. Like,
I mean, like, Swedish parents send their, like, 3-month-old children to Miami to learn how to play tennis. Like, it's awesome. Just, like, a haven for training. I think I made that up, but it's true.
No, I've seen it. I've seen it, like, on a local court. It was, like, actually, yeah. Strange story. Like, I was out there one morning. I think it was a weekday. I was off from work, and I was out shooting hoops, like, at, like, 8-9 in the morning, just because I felt like it. And I went out there, and on the court next to it, it was a tennis court next to it, and I think there was, like, two kids aged seriously like 4 and 6, a boy and a girl, and the trainer, with, like, a heavy German accent, I could hear him yelling, that's just bullshit, yelling at these kids. And I'm like, dude, I'm just trying to shoot hoops here, man, let me shoot in peace. Yeah, it was hilarious and terrifying simultaneously.
That's amazing. That's so amazing.
Only in Miami.
Yeah, only in Miami. Only in Miami.
Do we want to talk about this Heat-Cavs game a little bit?
Yeah, we'll and definitely talk a little bit as much as we can about it. Then we'll end up back talking about German tennis coaches.
Perfect. So let's just preview it for a couple minutes, and then... So the Heat are going to lose. So I'm trying to figure out, as a Cavaliers... somebody that covers the Cavaliers... Are you looking for anything? I don't know. If I were covering the Cavaliers, I'd probably be looking, like, how do they attack Whiteside? But that's just me.
Yeah, my thing was, this is the three things I had. Deion, because, like, I got to serve, right. I got to fill my own needs. the Channing Frye versus what they do when they put Channing Frye on the floor, because I think that's, like, what you do to Whiteside, and I wonder how you think they counter it. And then just, like, I kind of just, like, want my, because it's the first time these two teams have played. I think, like, it'd be worth talking about how this is going to be such a different thing with these teams playing, because before that there was Wade and LeBron, even if it was, like, not these, like, the Heat weren't exactly on the same level, like, there was this, like, rivalry a little bit there, and the Heat have beat, like, they beat the Cavs on Christmas last year. Yeah. I think, was that last year?
No, 2014-15 season.
Yeah, so, like, they beat them on Christmas, you know, and, like, the Heat have always played them very tough, and now it's, like, what is it like watching this, like, this Heat? Like, you went from, like, the big three to, mm-hmm. like, okay, Wade and Bosch to, okay, Chris Bosch and the Heat are, like, not at all on the same page, and he, you know, isn't obviously playing. Wade's with the Bulls. Like, what is it like watching this team and just, like, getting that perspective, I think? I'm curious because, like, I just don't know what to make of them. Like, are they, in you guys' opinion, like, and I'll ask this probably in the pod too, so maybe don't, like, explain everything, but are they more likely to end up in that, like, Big East middle pack or, like, with the Nets and the 76ers when the season...
I'm recording, so I'm going to pick this up at some point, so...
Fair enough.
So this is the podcast.
Yeah. But yeah, the German tennis coach will be there on the podcast.
That will make it in for sure. I'm probably going to start it with David just screaming, "This is bullshit," in a German accent.
Yeah.
But so I think a lot of people thought, like, all right, there was this, like, little rumbling, bubbling thing last year that it would be cool to see a lot of these young players play without Dwayne Wade. Now, I didn't necessarily think that, even though I might have, but I don't want to admit it to myself. But it was, you know, it was a little bit of, like, it was like 44% of what Lakers fans dealt with Kobe. You know, where, because, like, Wade is so usage heavy. And I think that when Wade left, it was certainly heartbreaking and weird and shocking. But at the same time, you know, you try to, like, you know, you mourn and you try to find silver linings. And then you're like, okay, well, maybe this team can, like, be really young and play. This will be, like, a lot of ball movement. There won't be so much isolation heavy between, like, Wade and Bosch and Joe Johnson and these guys. Like, they're going to play, like, really fast, and they're going to play around Goran Dragic, and it's going to be really cool. And they just haven't done that. So, and I've said this before, I don't mind that the team's not good. It's just kind of not fun to watch because they're slow. They have a tendency to, like, kind of plod. Like, I would be fine if it was, like, a 7 seconds or less offense and they shot 34% from the field. I'd be fine with that. But it's just, like, because at least it would be fun, you know? But it hasn't really been that.
Yeah, and we don't know about the pieces that they do have, whether or not they're the kind of players worth building about. I mean, you can look to a really bad example in Philadelphia where, you know, they have Joel Embiid, and even when he wasn't on the floor, at least you had something to look forward to. But I think we're as good as it's going to get at this point as far as our development issue is concerned. And you've got, you know, Whiteside, who's, you know, fairly young, but, you know, he's 27 and he's only been in the league for a few years, obviously. And, you know, you don't know where you're going to get from him on a night-to-night basis. You want to see more consistency and more growth, and that just hasn't been the case. And then as far as the other younger players, specifically Justice Winslow, you know, Josh Richardson and Tyler Johnson, there are questions about all of them. You know, Richardson, I think, is probably at this point the more complete player of the three, and he's the one who's on the cheapest contract and the best overall value. But he's a very solid defender, very solid three-point shooter. And it's just, you know, you want to see him continue to grow, but you have a lot of expectation for one Johnson, the guy that you're paying a whole heck of a lot of money to, and Justice Winslow, who is a high draft pick and arguably has the highest ceiling of the three. But right now he's just so woeful on offense that you keep harping on his defense and what he does bring. Look, he does a lot of things well, but offense isn't one of them as far as his shooting is concerned. So you're kind of just playing this waiting game. It's a little frustrating, I think, especially when you put it in context of the success that the team has had over the last few years. And even those 2 years there at post LeBron, I think, were, you know, you had somewhat high expectations because, you know, I think with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade on the team, you considered yourself, if not necessarily a legitimate title contender, at least a playoff hopeful. And maybe once you get into it, you never know, you know, when the rivalry against, you know, let's say if you face a Cleveland Cavaliers team with LeBron in the playoffs in 2014-15, when you have Bosch at full strength and Whiteside starting to come up in the league, and you make this trade for Dragic, you consider that maybe, you know, you can accomplish something, and unfortunately it falls flat. But, you know, and now we're just playing this waiting game. Like I said, it's a little frustrating.
Yeah, that's tough. Like, I, as someone who has watched the Cavs my whole life, like, I can empathize with that because post the first LeBron era is some of the worst basketball I've ever watched in my life. Sure. Like, the Anthony Bennett, you know, the Spencer Hawes being, like, a revelation, like, those are things that meant nothing. But it's like, right, when Anthony Bennett would dunk, it was like, oh my god, this is, like, the most exciting thing that's ever happened because you're actually seeing something. And it's like that's complete opposite of it now. And it's like, in some ways, but in some ways, like, I kind of like that because it's sort of, you kind of see some stuff you can't see when you're playing at that highest level. or like when you're watching teams at the highest level, because of course, like we're not playing NBA basketball ourselves, but like there's some beauty in that, like, and it's frustrating, but it's like, this is probably so unique for you guys, right? Because this is the first time in my, you know, my basketball memory that the Heat have been in this position. Like, this is new territory for Pat Riley. This is new territory for Eric Spoelstra. And you have Deion Waiters, so, like, you know, that's enough.
I've contended that at least having Deion makes it entertaining, you know, even if he's not, like, a guy that you're going to build around. He at least brings some fun to the game. Otherwise, it would be a bunch of guys standing around waiting for somebody else to create shots. But, yeah, I don't mean this as a critique of Heat fans, but they are spoiled. And this is kind of like a grounding moment. I thought, especially during the Big Three era, people would complain about things like, you know, they don't get enough rebounds. It's like, who gives a shit? They're winning. Like, they went to the NBA Finals every year. Like, they're not supposed to be rebounding. They do that by design. And now it's like, you know, they're not. It's not. Everything's not hidden beneath, like, LeBron just going off of 30 and Bosh scoring, like, you know, 21 and Wade scoring 28, like, consistently, like, every night or whatever it was. Like, it's almost a little, it's like humbling almost.
Yeah. No, go ahead, Dave.
Go ahead, Chris.
Go ahead. I was like, this is what I wonder, like, when the Cavs eventually are bad again, and if it comes fast, if it's like a slow, drawn out thing, if LeBron, you know, is around for another 8 years or whatever. I wonder if Cav fans are going to, like, how they're going to react, because it's like, I could see them thinking we're spoiled now. Like, we expect this high level basketball, but the other end of it is like, you had LeBron, and it's like, whatever comes after LeBron, unless you somehow get the next LeBron, like you somehow pull a Spurs and you go from David Robinson to Tim Duncan or like, whatever the situation that exists like that, like, and there's probably like five of them or something. It's going to be worse. You know,
yeah.
There's no way it's going to equal what it is right now.
Do you have any private, you know, guess or expectations as to how much longer he'll play? I mean, and do you think he'll wind up finishing his career in Cleveland? I know that's a lot to digest and consider, but
I think he does finish in Cleveland. I think he has the ability to leave now from a PR standpoint if he wanted to.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
But I think the way he would leave was if he could actually play with the Super Friends, like if that was actually realistic. Yes. And I don't actually
Banana Boat Crew.
Yeah, if you get the Banana Boat Crew and it was somewhere, it would have to be somewhere that, you know, like, honestly, like the joke is like Lala, but like that everyone would be comfortable with, and that's like not going to be Cleveland. You know, like it's just not.
Right.
We kind of talked about this after Wade left. Like, it's not. It can't be Miami anymore. Where maybe before Wade left, and kind of like this iffy relationship between Pat Riley and those players now, like maybe it could have been Miami in 3, 4, 5 years. Now that's like out the window.
Yeah, I could see, and it's just like the places you would think it could happen are kind of off the table. Like the Lakers would, the Lakers obviously are in LA, and like LeBron has a house in LA. You know, like that's a city you would go to as a group of stars. That I don't really see that being like a thing. You know, like they'd have to change some stuff. The Clippers. Like, you know, they have their own things to figure out. And just aside from finding a location for it to work, the timing of the contracts is kind of wonky. Yeah. Chris Paul's a free agent this summer. He should take a 5-year max. Like, this is his last big contract because of his age, because of the position he plays, right? Like, he has to take probably that 5-year deal somewhere. Carmelo's in a deal right now. Wade's a little, you know, the oldest of the bunch in terms of how many miles he has on his legs, and he's under contract in Chicago. LeBron has it, you know, this year and next year for sure. I think he does stay. I could be totally wrong, and we have no idea. And it'll be interesting to see when he is a free agent again, like if he does do it, because he realistically could say, okay, I got the title, and maybe they win one or two more. Kyrie and Love were there for a tad bit longer than him, if I'm not mistaken. You could just say, I'm turning the ball over to them. Like, this is your team now. And he could go play with his friends, but if the timing's not right, I don't know if he would just leave for the sake of leaving again, unless it's with the Banana Boat Friends. Like, there's no other scenario to me that makes any sense.
No.
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, to me, it's just like, I don't see it ever happening because all the reasons you just said. Like, just go play on the Olympics together and just do it like every summer or whatever, or just, you know, the World Cup or whatever it is. Just do that, you know, every couple years or whatever. And that should be enough. Like, I don't know. what's also weird is that if he wanted to play with his friends so bad, like, he left Miami where he was playing with two of his better friends in the NBA anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just think he likes Cleveland too much. That's just, like, why would he leave? Like, he's, like, the king of Cleveland. Like,
yeah.
Like, why would you leave that? Like, I don't know.
There's not really a reason to. Like, I think the reasons that, like, would make sense would be his friends. And, like, you know, we said, like, he couldn't go to the Heat now. He's not going to go to the Knicks as long as Phil's there. Like, you know, and they they have their own cap issues, you know, like,
yeah, he won't sign LeBron in his posse.
Yeah.
It's not gonna happen.
And, like, won't apologize for saying posse and, like, offending the best player ever, but, you know, or one of the best players ever. But, like, it's just such an interesting, he's such a fascinating guy, and I actually have no idea, like, when he, like, retired. Like, I don't know if I can see LeBron being Kobe. Like, I don't know if I can see LeBron, like, doing where he basically goes on that retirement tour. I don't know if that's really him to that extreme level. You know,
he seems like a little bit more introspective, or maybe, like, realistic than maybe Kobe. I thought Kobe was just such a monster and just thought he was the greatest ever all the time. Where I think LeBron might have the basketball. Nah, that's not the right way to say it. Might just be, like, self-reflecting enough to say, like, when his powers really are waning, to be like, yeah, you know what? I'm not going to do the Kobe thing. I'm going to retire right now. Like,
you're assuming that Kobe's last couple of seasons were the result of lacking introspection. But I think it's a very realistic possibility that he simply didn't care. Like, he might have known that he was crippling the team and that he was going to take most of the attention and most of the money. But at the same time, he probably felt like he deserved it. And maybe he did. You know, some would probably argue that. And that would probably be enough to justify hanging on there, you know, probably a couple of years too long. But as far as
LeBron, taking, like, all the shots that he did, though, that's kind of like what. Like, but to the same point, like, LeBron is almost, like, you could tell, like, not to say Kobe didn't care about LA, but, like, not to the same degree LeBron cares about Cleveland, obviously. So
I don't think he'd hang on too long at the cost of, like, team success. Like, he's not going to, if he has to sit there through a 15 and 67 win season, you know, I don't think he'll stick around for that. I mean, not to be the center of attention at that point. I mean, although I'm sure he loves being the center of attention because, well, he's an NBA player and a superstar and nearly a billionaire at this point. I mean, I think he loves being the center of attention, but I don't think he's going to do it and sacrifice the chances to continue to win and put your team in playoff contention.
He's already starting to coast a little bit, though, right, Chris? Like, is he kind of taking it off a little bit? Yeah, in the regular season.
I don't know if you guys saw at least saw the highlights of the Bucks game where they got destroyed.
Yeah.
He didn't care. Like, after the game, he's just like, whatever. Like, not that he doesn't care that they lose, but he's just like, it doesn't faze him.
It was like the biggest win of the season for Milwaukee.
Yeah, and it's just like, that happens all the time. You know,
and we saw that in Miami too. I mean, it was, you know, and this was a younger version of him, and, you know, maybe perhaps a little bit more driven at times during the regular season. But I mean, there were clearly moments there where you knew the team was coasting, and you know, losses were going to happen. I mean, with the exception of that 66 win season, and, you know, the 27 game win streak and everything else, I don't really think they cared all that much about what happened during the regular season. It was all about, you know, the playoffs and, of course, and getting a championship.
Yeah, and the other thing with LeBron is, like, Kobe was the extreme extension of Michael Jordan, right? Like, he had that he took Michael's attitude, and then instead of, like, taking it to where Michael took it in, like, sort of a slightly healthier way, he'd take it to the absolute extreme in every possible way. LeBron is, like, in so many ways the opposite of what Michael was. Like, he's not, you know, this kind of crazy, super intense star. He's friends with a lot of people. Like, a little more chill about things. He dances on the court, you know, like, he just has a little bit more levity to him and a little bit more just kind of, like, a happiness and joy to him than I think, like, a Michael or a Kobe did. And that's, like, a knock on them, because look at how many NBA players, like, idolized Kobe. Like, the second person Kyrie Irving called after they won the finals, like, he called his dad and he called Kobe. Like,
that's weird.
It's super weird. I can't, like, it is what it is. Like, it was,
and,
like,
Kobe was just like, yeah, I was watching it on TV. Like, I know.
Yeah. And
I mean, where did they even become, like, such close friends during Olympic
when, Kyrie, when he was 19, challenged Kobe to one-on-one at a USA camp, but when he was on USA Select.
Oh.
And, like, went at him and was, like, talking crap to him at this, like, USA Select camp, like, when he was, like, 19 years old in, like, a second year in the NBA or something. And they, I think they, like, bonded off that. And he talks about Kobe a lot,
Isn't that weird? I mean, that's like a weird part of like players. It's like, you know, you come up to me as a punk kid and challenge me and start talking smack, and all of a sudden I'm going to develop a level of respect for you. That's probably a little bit unhealthy. I mean, it's like nowhere outside in regular life does somebody act like a jerk to you, and then you go, you know what, we could be friends.
Sports are weird. Like your sports attitude, kid.
Like you got spunk, buddy.
Yeah. Sports are weird.
they are.
Like, they're super weird. But it's just, I don't know. It's such a fascinating thing. And I think every year you have, and I'm sure like you guys, like knowing this, like having covered a LeBron team for, you know, like however long he's there, like it's such a thing where it's so much different than anything else you could cover. And it's like this and the Warriors right now are the only two things that are just sort of, it's almost like hard covering them every night though. And like, I feel like that's such a first world thing to say, but it's like, I watched the Knicks game last night and I'm like, oh, of course they like wreck the Knicks, you know, like there's nothing interesting for me to say about this. It's like,
there's so many, and it's sometimes there's like so many important things. Like I could have written 600 words on the bottle flipping thing. Like it's crazy. Like, so, but for the Heat, I agree completely with what you're saying. Cause it's like, there's so many different angles to go at. So you're almost like, okay, where do I go? Like, do I go the Kevin Love angle? Do I go the Kyrie Irving angle? Do I go the LeBron angle? Do I go the role players? Do I go with the off the court stuff? Do I go with the coaching stuff? But with the Heat, like the other night, they got destroyed by the Hawks, and there was one story. The Hawks beat them in the paint. Period, end of story. Cut, clean, dry, print. Like, you're done. And it's really not that difficult sometimes.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. BOOM.
Yeah, with the Cavs, it's like, I don't know, I'd love to actually get your guys' take on this because I don't know how much it matters, but everyone is saying that they need a backup point guard. I think it's sort of like kind of dumb to invest anything into that because LeBron is your backup point guard when the playoffs start, and he's already kind of doing all your not all of it, but a lot of your distributing. And then I watch like the Knicks game, and I think, okay, like they're trying to do this thing where they're playing Shumpert, RJ, I can't remember the Liggins, I think, and then two bigs, and I'm like, okay, like maybe here is where Mario Chalmers makes a lot of sense. But it's like, does it actually matter that much? And I get like 5 mailbag questions a week about point guards. Like a guy today tweets me. I'm going to pull it and tell you exactly who he tweeted me about. Because like I want to make sure that like I don't get the name wrong. This guy tweets me and he goes, okay, there's this new story about the Nets waving Yogi Ferrell, who like I kind of like didn't really know who that was.
Yeah.
And he goes,
Indiana, right?
Yeah, played for Indiana, right. And the guy goes, potential pickup? And I'm like, no. Like, yeah.
No.
Yeah, I'm just like, he's.
I like Yogi Ferrell. I think he'd be a star on the Cavaliers. I'm just playing devil's advocate. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm just like, I get so many questions about these things. About things. I'm just like, I don't know how actually to like justify this as like a thing. You know, it's like the things that matter. Like, is Amon Shumpert going to be as good of a shooter as he's been? Probably not. Like, is J.R. Smith eventually going to be fine? Probably. Like, is Kevin Love going to be as good as he is this whole year? I think, like, that's what I think. It's, like, all these other little things, like, backup point guard, like, you know, is Kay Felder going to develop? Like, those things are just so hard to be, like, that actually matters right now because we already sort of, like, I feel like I know where this is headed in some way or another.
But I do have to admit, though, that, I mean, that, you know, if anything, that really shows, like, a level of commitment on the part of, like, Cavs fans that they think about that kind of minutiae. Because I mean, I can't say that I know everybody that, you know, that represents the Heat fandom, but I don't think they really cared all that much about those kind of small details. Now, in context of like during the Big Three era when they were contending for championships, and I think, you know, that's where more or less where the Cavaliers are this year. So
I think we saw a little bit of that with like who plays center, or like who plays backup center. Who's the other center other than Chris Bosh? Like, I thought. Yeah.
During the first two seasons when you had, you know, Dampier or Jamal McGlure or Joel Anthony starting at center, you know, that's a little bit different. But if you've got Kyrie or Irving there, and if you've got, again, like Chris said, LeBron, who could play backup point guard at times and certainly is a hell of a facilitator, who really gives a damn who's your backup point guard with a 14th guy in your benches? Unless you can get a guy like Mario Chalmers, who's
exactly
a game changer.
Cavs fans do love to draft, though. Like, Cavs fans love the draft, and they love trade rumors. Like, every time we post something on Fear the Sword about that, it's like someone could have written this amazing LeBron analysis piece about his passing or something, and it's like, no, there's this, like, wonky trade rumor about some, you know, like, D-League guy, and everyone's, like, arguing about, like, we had someone argue in the comments for, like, 3 weeks about Quinn Cook at one point, and I was just like, what are you doing? I'm like
Cook's...
Ironically enough, I saw that in connection with the Heat today. Somebody was tweeting about how Quinn Cook scored, like, I don't even know, like 30 something points.
No, he's good, though. He's actually good.
Sure.
He's actually good.
But can that translate to the NBA level? I mean, I think he can in the D League, but I mean, I don't know that he's necessarily going to get a lot of playing time to, you know, or the kind of, you know, number of shots that it would take to score.
I'd love to talk about Quinn Cook the entire podcast, but the listeners might turn this thing off. I think we should really focus on the star here, and that was Mario Chalmers. And I know you guys both had a little bit of opportunity to talk about it, but I would regret if I didn't have a chance to at least say that. To answer your question, Chris, does it matter if the Cavaliers have a backup point guard? No, you're absolutely right. I challenge most people that even watch basketball for the last 6 years to name the backup point guard for the Heat when LeBron was there. Challenge them. But what you can tell me is that Mario Chalmers was the starting point guard. So, no, the Cavaliers do not need a starting backup point guard because they do have LeBron. And if you look at the Warriors, they don't really have a backup point guard. They have that McCaw kid who they play sometimes. Well, but, you know, Livingston, you have all those other players. And Livingston.
Yeah. But it's like you have KD and you have Steph.
Right, they're the guys bringing up the ball. And so, yeah, no, the Cavaliers don't need a backup point guard, but they do need Mario Chalmers. Because yes. Mario Chalmers needs to be involved in the NBA somehow.
And you know, as a Waiters fan, you'll be happy to have Chalmers on your team.
That's true.
you'll really enjoy the Chalmers experience, and it is quite an experience. So,
but LeBron is known to yell at right now, so.
Oh, well, and
like, he's not somebody fits
the role. No, so the way things are right now, it's like, last year Mozgov was the person he screamed at all the time, and then obviously it was Rio in Miami. So like this year the locker room is like really chill. They clown Liggins sometimes after games.
Of course.
Like the one time it was like he had like a plate of food and he hadn't played, and LeBron was like, "Why do you need to eat?" Like just like
did he snatch the plate out of him?
LeBron like sits in his locker for a while and like takes his time. And, like, the Liggins, like, kind of gets in and out. And he's just like, dude, like, why do you need that whole thing of food? And it's just like, oh. Like, but.
It's empty carbs, man. Empty calories. You didn't work those off.
You're going to have to go, like, do some sprints now, man. But, like.
That chicken parm.
Yeah. But, like, Birdman's locker's next to him. So, like, his like, you know, like, he's not really yelling at Kay Felder, as far as I know. Jordan McRae's just kind of, like, his dance buddy. So he doesn't yell at anybody, and it's like kind of like a weird thing because he obviously yelled at Mozgov, yelled at Kevin Love sometimes. I think Kyrie frustrated him more than we maybe have talked about. Like, we always talked about Kevin Love frustrating him. I think Kyrie certainly, they didn't necessarily mesh on day one.
Right. But he couldn't be as overt about it, I think, because that would have shed a lot of light on whether or not it was a bad decision to come back, whether or not Kyrie was the right guy to compliment him, et cetera. So, I mean, it's easier to yell at a guy kind of on the periphery. Not that Chalmers was on the periphery. He was a vital part of our championship success in Miami. But by the same token,
most important. Yeah.
Arguably, yeah, absolutely. That LeBron kid was okay, but it wouldn't have happened without Mario Chalmers.
No, not at all. But, like, if Rio is healthy, I'm down. Like, I'm down for that. But the thing is, like, they have this stupid Mo Williams contract still on the books. And it's so it's like every game, every time I cover a game and I get the game notes, I was like, I was just get a kick out of, like, looking at the injured players, and it's like, Mo Williams not with team.
Oh, wow.
And he's just, like, Instagramming himself with, like, Alabama football games.
Well, Miami's going through something similar where they show Chris Bosh's name and then no reason why he's out. And that's kind of – that's more the depressing end of the spectrum than anything else. They don't have a reason why he's missing.
Like, we know, guys. Like, you can just say, like, this didn't go well.
Well, that's, you know, now that we've got you on here, I'm curious, you know, if you have a perspective, because obviously, you know, the Cavs have had some drama during the LeBron years, during the non-LeBron years, and seeing how this play took place in Miami as far as Chris Bosh is and everything else. What's your perspective, and if you have any insight into, like, Cleveland fans' perspective on what went down between Bosh and the front office?
Well, I think your average Cavs fan is, like, petty with Pat Riley.
Sure.
Like, and I don't know how like you guys feel about Pat, but like I think there's a lot of like I think I for me I understand the perspective of like you don't want to like set up Bosch to be in a position where he shouldn't be, right? But it always kind of came across as if to an extent, like I want Bosch to be able to make that decision for himself. You know, it's like I want to feel like I never feel like he actually got a chance to like that he ever was going to come back to Miami. Like I never got the vibe that they were like really interested in.
But he kind of thing. To challenge that though, I mean, he did fail a third blood test and yeah, like, he did double box again.
Yeah, it's like, but that, like that's the thing. It's like every time it's like you hear like he's going to come back, it's like he fails another blood test, and it's like it doesn't like seem like he's ever actually going to be healthy enough to play. Like I hope he gets a chance to like maybe like another team can tell him no, you know, and maybe that's like the closure we need.
That would be great.
Like if the Dallas Mavericks like throw a max contract at him because like they have to spend money, right? Like,
right.
Like Mark Cuban will do it. Like then maybe someone else can tell him no. But it just, it's such a weird toxic thing. And it like sucks because those teams, as much as like when I was still more of a diehard fan,
right.
Yeah, cause like, I'm like, you know, my fandom is dying and it like,
sure.
Like dead inside. Like those Heat teams were hard to watch because it was like, I wanted to watch LeBron on my team. And then when he's gone, it's like you like, but then once I got to the point where like I was appreciating basketball for being like really good basketball, you get to see what Bosch did and how good he was. Like,
sure.
Like part of the reason I think we skewed Kevin Love is because Chris Bosch filling that role in Miami, playing the five.
He's so good at it. Yeah, he's so good at it.
So good at it. And it's like, it sucks that guy is not in the league right now. Like, it sucks.
Yeah, I mean, even in context of this season, you know, obviously Whiteside's ensconced center, but we look at what's missing in the power forward position, and we have this thing on our podcast where we award the quote-unquote power forward belt after every performance, and, you know, we award to the best power forward because we've got basically a trio – well, I guess four options between James Johnson, Derek Williams, Josh McRoberts, and Luke Babbitt, and that's not very spectacular. Yeah, it's not exactly a lot of talent to choose from. Although James Johnson has been great, and he's held it every game this season, minus the last two where he was held out because of injury. So, aside from that, it's been James Johnson's belt for the whole season. But you know, we talk about what's missing. It's like, well, we need a guy who can space the floor, somebody who's able to facilitate a little on offense, who might be willing to drive to the hoop and not just stand around while Deion Waiters does it constantly. And you know who's perfect for that? Chris Bosch would do it. He'd be great at the power forward position. Unfortunately, he's not around.
Yeah. Like, do you think he plays again? Like, just your gut reaction? Like, do you think he ever plays again?
No.
Not for Miami, no. I don't see that, obviously, but I mean,
the man's gonna hold him down. It's funny that you mentioned like I want him to make his own decision, and I was like right there with you. Like it would be nice to make his own decision, but then I like look at the NFL and all the situations that they're having with concussions and players making their own decisions and being like, let's just go in. And now we're all like ragging on the NFL after they've been doing that for like 40, 50 years, and we're like, what? You're gonna let these concussed sick guys like go and make their own decision? That's freaking idiotic. And I know a concussion actually like changes your brain state and they don't know what you're doing, but these are still athletes. Like they want to play. So sometimes it does take like an independent physician or something to say like, no dog, you're not playing. And I kind of talked about that about Bosch. It's like he can get on the court and he's got such a weird injury. It's not like he's got like a broken leg or like a torn Achilles where he can't like walk or jump or anything like that. It's like he's got this like weird dumb blood thing like that he can't see or even feel most times. And he can get on the practice court and he can dribble, he can do cone drills, you know, dribbling through cones, and he can shoot threes, he can watch the ball go in the net over and over and over again. He's like, the hell, like I'm good to go, like let me play. And then, because it's like a weird injury, or it's not even an injury, it's like an illness, you know, it's one of these strange things that it's unseeable, and it's just like, I don't know, it's weird for him. So it almost takes like an independent doctor or somebody to be like, no, like this isn't safe, you don't fully understand. Like, you're really in danger being on the court. And I thought, you know, we did a crossover podcast with Locked On Spurs. And Jeff said, the host of Locked On Spurs said, like, if it was Greg Popovich and he was in the situation that, like, Pat Riley or Eric Spoelstra was in, he'd be like, no, get off the court. I'm taking care of you. Don't do this to yourself. And he would almost do it in, like, a fatherly way. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, maybe if it wasn't Pat Riley. You know,
yeah.
Like maybe that's
he's part not of the it. Fatherly figure.
Like, he's got, like, he's the guy who throws the rings down on the table, has, like, the kind of, like, bat, movie villain bad guy look to him, right? Like, it's not like Greg Popovich, who's, like, showing up in Vote for the Pedro shirts in 2016, you know?
Riley needs to grow that beard, though. I think that would be the next step. Like, we see him, even when he has that stubble, it's a little bit more, like, Miami Vice-ish, if anything, you know. It's a little more menacing than, oh, look, he just hasn't shaved for a few days. Like, when Pop does it, it's almost like a really ragged Santa Claus look. But no, not Riley still got the slick back hair and everything else. He's still imposing. And, you know, he's 6'4", or whatever. He's just, you know, he's still a scary-looking figure. It doesn't work for him. But, yeah, maybe a beard. Maybe a full-grown beard would really change his appearance quite a bit. And maybe the public perception. It's funny that you mentioned that he's or that Cavs fans have a little testiness towards Riley is because he lured him away in 2000, because he lured LeBron away in 2010. Is most of that?
Yeah, I would say that. And I think I think that and like everything that happened, it's just like, there's a resentment there. Like, and I think that's enough. And I think there is one of those things where it's like guys that LeBron doesn't really see eye to eye with anymore become sort of, ill-viewed in Cavs fans' eyes. So, like, Phil Jackson...
kind of, like, rally behind LeBron. Like, that's our guy. Like, if you don't like him, you don't like him.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. It's like, Pat Riley's that way. Phil Jackson is that way after that. So...
Draymond Green.
Yeah, I cannot wait to see what kind of reaction Draymond Green gets on Christmas Day. Like, I cannot imagine that it is going to be pretty. And, like, the nuttiest thing is, like... one, I was convinced the Cavs were going to draft him when he came out because he went to Michigan State, and Dan Gilbert, like, it seems like the type of owner who would draft guys from the college he went to.
And well, wasn't Tom Izzo, like, linked to the Cavs for the longest time, too?
Yeah. That was, like, every summer when they needed a coach, it was, like, Tom Izzo. Even before they hired Blatt, it was, like, I think Izzo's name came up.
Yeah.
And then if he was on the Cavs, he's, like, exactly the kind of player that, like, Cavs fans would love.
Sure.
Like, I think most fan bases would kind of think the way, but the Cavs loved Anderson Varejao for, you know, a decade or whatever, and he's not exactly, like, the cleanest player in the league, you know? He's, like, he bumps guys, he plays sort of this kind of crazy style.
Well, Dellavedova, most recently.
Oh, my God, yeah. Like, I really, Deli hasn't played in Cleveland yet, and he does, I believe, the week after next. If I'm not mistaken, the first
he'll get a hero's welcome, yeah.
Well, no, he's gonna get like a hero's welcome, then he's gonna elbow Kyrie and like knock Kyrie over and like get booed. Like, he's gonna elbow Kyrie in the gut and like knock Kyrie over and just like act like he didn't do anything.
That was funny that like Cavalier fans would complain about how dirty Draymond was, because he was, but then it's like, yeah, but Deli's our guy. And like, Deli is like the white point guard Australian version of Draymond Green,
yeah. I would, like, love to see, this is, like, I would love to see, like, just throw, like, a game of, like, all the dirtiest, like, players in the league and just, like, see who comes out. Like, I want to know.
That would be Draymond Green, Dellavedova, Varejao, I guess, could still make the team.
Mike Dunleavy sneakily on that list.
Ooh. Yes, he is.
Remember when he baited Giannis 2 years ago?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, weren't you complaining about somebody that was a little dirty the other day?
No, not necessarily. Embiid, I think. Well,
yeah,
I love not necessarily. Man.
Yeah,
I love that guy.
Look, he's a lot of fun to watch. He's great. He's just got a hell of a lot of attitude, and it really showed up in that game against Miami. It wasn't necessarily dirtiness, but well, Joakim Noah was kind of like, well, I mean, he uses his hands a lot.
He's dirty.
Wade. I mean, look,
Wade's
today,
not dirty. Get that out of here.
That piece from Shea Serrano over at The Ringer about giving Wade his due came out, and of the comments, I started, you know, riffling through those, and it was like, oh, he's dirty, he doesn't deserve love. It's like, wow, I didn't realize that there was this kind of animosity, and I've seen it throughout the 13 years of his career or whatnot, but I didn't realize it was that prevalent. And yeah, I mean, a lot of people certainly think so. I mean, I imagine most people in the Northeast, you know, especially in the New England area, probably detest Dwayne Wade.
Yeah.
Kelly Olynyk, maybe?
Kelly Olynyk.
Since he, like, tried Kevin Love's arm off.
Cavs fans fully nominate Kelly Olynyk.
That's true.
Marcus Smart gets on there for his flopping. And then Joakim Noah, funny thing about him, opening night, the Cavs play the Knicks. The national anthem starting, or no, as they're doing Cavs announcements, like the player announcements on this night. And Noah, like, refuses to get off the floor to shoot free throws. Like, he like, on the other side, like, he shoots, like, 10 more free throws, and some, like, ball boy looks, like, horrified as, like, the security guard comes over to, like, make them get off. And he just, like, he was, like, just, like, I think he mostly did it because of where he was. Like, I think he's just, sure. like, I'm going to screw with these guys because he's joking Noah. Like, that's what he
I does. Love that stuff. That stuff's great.
I do, too. I find it hilarious.
Like the NFL get, like, would really have fined those it. Guys. It's just, yeah. like, the NBA just, like, kind of celebrates it, but they also, yeah. like, don't do that. Like, it's yeah. they walk that fine line really well.
Yeah,
like, I did want to ask before we wrap this thing up, what I want you to, like, think on this for a second, because I know it's going to be – this is kind of a tough question, but what is the road that you would not want to see the Cavaliers take in the playoffs to get to the finals? Like, what would be the toughest road in your opinion?
All right, let me look at the standings. And then I have one question for you because I need okay. to – I actually – it's a two-parter. So – first round, I would not want to play. I probably would not want to play a team like the Bucks or the Pistons,
mm-hmm.
Because those are the teams that I think are just play with a lot of energy, and are gonna like come at you for even if it's a 4-game series. Like, and I think there's a value to that, but that would be the toughest first round matchup.
Plus, the Bucks got your number.
Yeah, I mean Giannis, like Giannis and Jabari, like, and I mean Delly might hurt somebody, so.
So you'd prefer like an Indiana or an Atlanta or a Charlotte?
Like, if I'm the Cavs, like I want the Knicks to finish eighth.
Okay.
Because there's like literally nothing the Knicks can do to win a game.
Yeah, but I mean from a Miami perspective, I would hate to see, you know, 2 weeks of LeBron Carmelo friendship talk after, you know, before and after every game. It would drown out the fact that actual playoff basketball is taking place.
Yeah, but barely. Carmelo might just like fake an injury if he's mad at Phil at that point. So, you know, whatever.
Right. So second, not Detroit, not Milwaukee in the first round.
Yeah, okay. Like if you can avoid those teams, like early, if you have to only one of them instead of two of them, like that's probably ideal. Yeah. Second round, I think if you can get a team like Chicago, like if they inflatedly finish a little bit higher, like that's not a bad option. I think, you know, the Hornets would be an option because I think, like, they play the Cavs tough, but, like, I don't think they do enough to really push them. And I do think there's also this just second gear waiting. And I think, and then when you get to the Eastern Conference Finals, like, I think, like, if you want to play, if they wanted to play one team, it's probably Boston. Like, I don't think they respect anybody. Like,
yeah.
And I feel, like, really bad saying that, but it's like, I really don't think they respect any team in the East. Like, I really
don't view them as, like, a legitimate challenge. So who would be the one team that you would not want to play in the finals? The Toronto then?
Yeah, Toronto's the second. I think Toronto just plays them so hard. I think they have things that can push the Cavs. But I like you, but it's like they're not going to beat them, but it's like Boston, the Cavs are going to dominate those games on the boards because Boston's not really a good rebounding team.
I still think Toronto needs to just like
they need a if they get a power forward, like they need to
they should like, just trade everything that it takes to get Paul Millsap. Like I think it might be worth it. Like this is the window, right? It's like what are you holding
Lowry's
on assets?
Lowry's a free agent this summer. Yeah. Pascal Siakam cannot have Pascal Siakam as your starting power forward and beat the Cavs.
No. You might not even be able to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals with him. Like he's fine, but it's just like it's such a glaring weakness that position. I don't know why they don't do like just get somebody or I would even argue like just go get Nerlens Noel and then just play him and Jonas together because at least you have somebody that's like really good at something even if it's like one thing like you could just get those two guys together and just hope to dominate the boards against the Cavaliers or something and make that like the thing you do. I don't know.
They could get Chris Bosh once he gets waived by Miami.
Hey, that would be crazy. But
that would be terrible. That would be horrible.
If he was like good though, that'd be like perfect, but it's like they'd need a power forward, but it's like Boston, nothing they do really, you know, if I'm the Cavs like really bothers me. The Hornets are just solid, but like is Kemba Walker enough to beat you? Probably not. And Toronto plays so hard.
Beyond the East Coast then the East part of the Eastern Conference, you know, do you want to face the Warriors again in the finals despite the fact that they added Kevin Durant?
Just as someone who wants to watch really good basketball, that's the most compelling final series you could get. Like it's.
I think Cavalier fans are pretty confident in that series too.
Too confident, man. Too confident. Yeah. I think the Clippers series would be fascinating because I would like to see, I would like to see Chris Paul play for a title. Like that's something I would enjoy as someone who thinks Chris Paul gets like ragged on for things that aren't entirely his fault, you know. And like Blake and they're really good, but it's like. LeBron versus that Warriors team is like the most epic thing you could ask for. Now, we could see two games in December and then in January where the Cavs just get wrecked and it's like, oh, well, this is no fun. But like that's gonna happen, right? Like I just can't imagine, unless LeBron gets hurt or something. It's like I can't imagine that doesn't happen, you know?
Yeah. So yes, certainly seems like we're heading to that.
Yeah, I just can't see it like in another. The only other scenario I could see is like the Clippers beating them. Like I feel weird saying this, but it's like I almost feel like it's more likely the Warriors lose than the Cavs lose because of like the difference between who the Cavs are playing below them.
Absolutely.
And the West. Like I think the Clippers and the Spurs are better than any other team in the East.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah, that's fair.
It's like I think there's a better chance that the Warriors lose, and I feel crazy saying that because like look what they did to the Clippers.
Right. What was your question?
So okay, first off, scale of 1 to 10, how much are you enjoying Deion Waiters? I just need like a finite. I need an exact number. I need to know.
David, if you got a number in mind, I'm really trying to think this through though.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much I'm enjoying Waiters? I mean, I think from my perspective, I like seeing his constant effort. I think that he's, you know, a lot of the negative narrative that's followed him throughout his career continues to do so here in Miami. And I hate watching him fail, but I love watching him succeed. So when he does something great, or when he has a really great defensive stop or a really nice drive or long, you know, two pointer or whatever, I still cheer for him. So I'd say for me, it's probably a 9, but I know I do not speak for the Heat fan base. And I mean, I watching him play, I don't know that all of them loathe him, but a fairly good portion of them do. I'd say for them, it's probably like a 2, maybe even a 1.
Negative, maybe like a negative number.
possibly.
It probably ruins their night when Deion Waiters plays. I don't think that's a stretch to say. Yeah, Dave and I do not speak for the Heat Nation, Heat fan base when we talk about Deion Waiters. But to answer your question, I've really gotten a kick about watching him on defense. I think as erratic as he is offensively, he's really sound fundamentally on defense. Like he doesn't take too many risks, I don't think. Right. He gets really low in his stance. He bodies up dudes. He's like the exact opposite player on the defensive end. I love it. And maybe it's because he really had to get better on that end, so he did it fundamentally, where I think maybe he relies on his just, you know, given talents on offense. But I'd love to see him come off the bench. I don't think it's right for him to be a starter. I think it's a bad fit for him. It's setting him up to fail. If he came off the bench as a backup point guard, I think that would be a really good position for him. You know, you stagger his minutes with Dragic so that they're not on the court at the same time. If that were the case, I'd probably be at like a 9.5.
Yeah, I love Deion. Even if he's bad, like I was so excited when he was good with the Thunder. I think he fits that role. Like if you actually can get in the buy-in, I think if people actually respond to him well, like I think
in an alternative universe, playoff Deion is a thing.
Yeah. Well, I think part of the reason for his success in Oklahoma City was that he had such domineering personalities in Durant and Westbrook, and that doesn't exist in Miami. Like there is nobody that commands that kind of locker room respect. Other than Udonis Haslem, but you know he doesn't do enough on the court to warrant that respect carrying over. So, you know, maybe James Johnson to some regard, but I mean, who is he going to listen to? You know, Goran Dragic. Well,
like Durant and Westbrook were at least super good, so you didn't want to take the ball from their hands. Like Deion probably gets on the court, and he's like, somebody's got to do it, and he tries.
Well, like so. They also supported him. Like LeBron kind of was like done with him. And him and Kyrie didn't get along. Like the first day he gets to Oklahoma City, like there's being shade thrown at LeBron. He's like, yeah, like we're gonna support Deion. I'm like, okay, that's kind of awesome. But okay, here's the question I have. The Heat obviously have a ton of injuries. You know, they're missing a lot of really good players. Like the guys that I think Cavs fans want to see be like Justice Winslow, Deion, because it's like the return of Deion Waiters. Who do you like tell Cavs fans they should just pay attention to? Is it Whiteside? Is that like just the obvious answer here? Like watch Hassan Whiteside tomorrow or today?
I from my perspective, again, to me, it's Goran Dragic. I think, I mean, he's been one of the best, brightest spots of this season. It's been somewhat bleak, and he is eminently fun to watch. I mean, he's. What he does offensively is great. Maybe he's a little underrated, I think. And I think he's had a quietly great season that nobody's going to respect because, one, he's Dragic and he plays for a bad team in Miami. But I think he's been, you know, probably their most consistent offensive player because Whiteside, for all his talent and what he can do defensively, there are just too many nights where he goes a little AWOL, and that's difficult to watch. And I think for Dragic, I think he's been more consistent this season. The ball's in his hands. And that, you know, that's one of the carryover effects of not having Wade on this team, is that Dragic gets to control the tempo a little bit more, and he's been really good at it and very effective. And I think that's the player that I would watch. And maybe, you know, maybe you'll see something that you appreciate in his game.
Yeah, I think that's an answer, right? Because I think him and Kyrie will at least be fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd have to agree with that. If I was just going to – I agree with Dragic, but I was going to say one other player to kind of watch. Other than Dragic and Whiteside, who are like the two better players, I don't know, McRoberts? Tyler? Yeah. Johnson, make your – yeah, Tyler Johnson, make your own opinion whether or not you think he's worth $50 million. Look at him when he smiles. try to figure out how many teeth he has. I'm always interested to hear what people think about his haircut, because it's really bad. Yeah. That's about it.
Yeah, but this, I mean, at the very least, I was actually really excited, like, not to like gush on air, but I was like actually very excited to cross over with you guys, because I think your podcast is super funny. And it's good. So like, excited to talk to you guys, because like I needed an excuse to talk to like two guys I was excited to talk to, and you know, talk about a team that like it's just kind of like so fat. I think it's just such a fascinating dichotomy of like where these two teams are at and how these franchises that like shouldn't really maybe be connected like are so connected. And we got to talk about a bunch of like really random stuff, and I'm always here for that.
They have an inverse relationship of success, right? When Cleveland's bad, Miami was good. Miami was bad, Cleveland got good for an obvious reason. But yeah, thanks for joining us. We really did appreciate it. It was a good talk. Do you think – one last question, though. Yeah. Just you could be like yes or no. Outside perspective, should the Heat tank?
Yeah. Wait. I actually have a question because I don't know. How many of their future first-round picks do they have in the next like 3 years? Do they have all
of them? They have the one coming up. They have one that's owned to Phoenix the year after, so 2018, but that's top seven protected.
Then, yeah, tank. Like,
and then after that, the two of them, they have two more that just automatically go to Phoenix. They're not protected.
Yeah, and I would say commit to tanking. If you can unload Dragic, do it.
Yeah.
Like, just embrace it. Like, I know that
well,
like,
would make no, 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 harder but to watch. If you're really committed, do you trade Whiteside?
Oh, his age makes that tricky, right?
26 years old.
27.
27? Whatever.
Yeah, 27.
So. His trade value is probably not that high right now because you just signed him to a contract. And like he probably still has somewhat of the labels we saw attached him this summer probably or at least still somewhat there, right? Like you would think it's probably not exactly to dump him somewhere.
Well, his numbers are big, and I think there's two teams that might make that deal and Dallas. Put the assets in, Dallas and Portland.
If you could get a good – if you get C.J. McCollum back from Portland, I would do it.
Yeah, dog.
If you can get CJ McCollum, because I feel like they might have to trade him.
Speaking my language now.
Yeah,
That's the trade that makes too much sense. There's always a trade that makes sense, and that trade makes too much sense.
Like I mean, shout out to Tim Cato and like all the people that cover the Mavs and stuff. But like, what the heck are the Mavericks gonna trade? You know, like
that's true.
Like, do you really want Harrison Barnes? Like, do you really want like the corpse of Wesley Matthews?
Ooh.
You know, like
there's enough Wesleys representing Miami already.
Yeah, they got the podcast. That's all you need. That's all you need. But yeah, everyone should go give both these podcasts 5 stars and leave a really good rating. Like that's my advice for you on this weekend. Like, don't do anything else. Just go leave reviews on these podcasts.
Yeah, that'll take all weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. If someone writes that detailed of a review, like they can like guest host a show for Lockdown Cowboys.
Somebody wished us happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's fantastic.
on our iTunes review. I said it on the last podcast, but it made me like really happy, and I was like, "That's like super thoughtful." Thank you.
That's so amazing. Like, their 2016 isn't that terrible, apparently.
Well,
it's still complete shit.
Yeah, it's someone like just did a like a, I saw it on Twitter. Someone had like a thing where it was like the George Reeves Superman from like the 70s, like all happy and like smiley, and then there's like the Henry Cavill one that's just like murdering people and like a. Yeah, like to me at the beginning of 2016, and then like you're the Henry Cavill one at the end of 2016. Like, that makes sense. Like, that sounds about right.
All right, guys, this was fun. Enjoy the game.
Yeah, enjoy.
All right, take care, Chris.
Later.
With the holidays around the corner, now's your chance to save time and money at Safeway Stock Up Sale. Plus, earn 4x gas reward points on participating items. Look for tags on items like Honey Nut Cheerios. Select varieties are 4 for $8 with your club card. And select varieties of Betty Crocker Cake Mix, Brownie Mix, or Frosting are 10 for $10 with your club card. Maximum gas reward at participating Sunoco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Safeway stations in a single fill-up up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions, limitations, and exclusions apply. For complete details, go to Safeway.com.